to see you here tonight. We've had a busy afternoon, many activities going on, and this time of year, lots of people are getting out, enjoying the festivities of the season, getting ready for fall and other types of events. And we've got an event coming up in just a couple of weeks, and that's our fall gospel meeting. Jeff Jenkins will be here to present some wonderful lessons. Jeff and Dale are brothers. They come from a long line of preachers. They have uncles and father and nephews and others that are also preachers. And I know that you're going to be blessed by hearing Jeff Jenkins when he's here and when he's presenting God's Word. So I want you to start thinking about that. More information will be in the bulletin this week, as well as some ads in the paper. And I want you to start thinking about inviting some friends. And who do you know that could come and be with us and sit down and open our Bibles and open our minds together? So that's one of the things that I want us to talk about tonight, is an invitation. An invitation. Now, we all experience invitations from time to time. Maybe it's an invitation, I don't know, to a 50th wedding anniversary. Or maybe it's an invitation to a party that's going on. Or maybe it's an invitation to be a part of a club. Whatever it might be, we all like to be invited, because that means that we're going to be involved with things. Now, here on this slide, it shows that over 90% of Americans believe in God. Now, these numbers vary between different studies, but generally speaking, this is about what we're looking at. The vast majority of our citizens in this country believe in God, but fewer than half of them are affiliated with an organized religion. Now, let that sit in just for a little bit. Most of our people in this country, they believe in God or believe that there is a God, but they are not affiliated with any type of organized church or organized religion. Take those people then, and you start to look at each individual group, and you find that a good number of those members who are parts of these other churches don't bother to go to church. And so when we look out over the landscape in our communities, we find that the vast majority of people do not practice their religion, if indeed they do believe in God. Those who have already been through with religion, those who are now unchurched because they've walked away from church in one way or another. Studies have shown, and this is primarily coming from a fellow by the name of Tom Rainer, studies show that 75% of those who once were in church and decided to leave church later would welcome an invitation to come back if only someone would invite them. Now, I know that there are some people that are very hardened to church and church religion and organized churches, and they don't want any part of it anymore. They're fed up with the bureaucracy. They're fed up with the power plays. They're fed up with the hypocrisy and the other things that go along many times with organized religion. So they don't want any part of it because they don't see Jesus in that process. And some will be so hardened to the point that they pull away totally from God. One of the leading atheists today used to be a very prominent preacher in the apostolic church. And so you begin to see these people. How could you preach for this charismatic church over here one year, and the next year begin to doubt if God even exists? Sometimes the faith is destroyed because of the people and the processes in there. But the research shows that even those people who become disgruntled with church and fall away would welcome an invitation to come back if only we would invite them. Now, that puts a lot of pressure back on us, doesn't it? To be able to reach out and to help these people and to make way for them to come back. Now, I don't know about you, but there are places that I'd love to go in the world, and if somebody gave me an invitation to go, I think we'd go. I mean, Carl and I, we've not been to Niagara Falls yet, but if somebody said, you know, hey, we've got room in our RV, and we're going to take a trip up to Niagara Falls, would you like to go? What would you say, Carl? Yeah, we'll go. I promised her years ago we'd go up there, and I haven't made it yet with her. I made it once without her. That was not very good, was it? You know, well, it was kind of by accident. I was on business, and I was going up to Toronto, and so from Toronto down to Niagara Falls, it wasn't a bad drive, and I figured, well, I'm never going to be up here like this again. I think I'll just drive down and see the falls. And so I did. I drove down on the Canadian side, and I saw the falls, and they were beautiful. I stopped by, this was years ago, I stopped by a drugstore on the way and bought a couple of these disposable Kodak cameras. So that you could take the film and then just take the camera and everything back, and they would develop the roll. And so here I am. I fit that into that business trip. I was so proud of being so organized to do that. I got there, and I'm just running around taking pictures. And about an hour or so into my time there, I realized I'm the only person in Niagara Falls that's all alone. Everybody else is there with a tour group or on honeymoon. And here I am walking around all by myself. So one day I am going to take you. I will give you an invitation, and I'm sure that she will accept that invitation to go. But we want to be invited. We want to be included. When we were in Texas several years ago, we had a group that was that would meet once a month, and these were fellowship groups that would meet after services once a month. So we'd have a shortened service, and then we would meet in these other smaller groups. Some would meet in homes, and some would meet at restaurants. And one of the announcements was made one Sunday. It just made me cringe. It said, you know, if you're not a part of one of these groups already, just look around and go join one of these groups. You know, just go in and say, I'm going to be a part of your group. Well, not many of us are that brave to do that, are we? Now, if we're invited to be a part of this group that goes to this restaurant or goes to this person's house, we're all for that. But not many of us are so brave or brazen as to go in and just include ourselves without an invitation. You know that some of our friends that live right down the street from us and right across from this building would love to know more about what Jesus Christ can do for them, but they need a connection. They need some of us to extend an invitation to them. And that invitation not necessarily to come and hear Jeff preach next week or 2 weeks from now, or to come and be a part of our class, but maybe it's an invitation just to talk about where this world is going and what kind of solutions we could find and how God fits into the solution. You'd be amazed how many people would be open to talking about such things. Well, let's take a look at a few of these things from Luke chapter 14. And Luke chapter 14, I'm going to begin with verse 15 here as we read about this parable of the Great Supper. Now, when one of those who sat at the table with him, that is Jesus, heard these things, he said to Jesus, "Blessed is he who shall eat bread in the kingdom of God." Then Jesus said to the group there, "A certain man gave a great supper and invited many, and sent his servant at supper time to say to those who were invited, 'Come, for all things are now ready.' But they, with one accord, began to make excuse. The first said to him, 'I brought a piece of land, and I must go and see it, and I ask that you have me excused.' And another said, 'I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I need to go test them, and I ask you to have me excused.' Still another said, 'I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come.' So that servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, 'Go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city, and bring in here the poor and the maimed and the lame and the blind.' And the servant said, 'Master, it is done as you commanded, and still there is room.' Then the master said to the servant, 'Go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in that my house may be filled. For I say to you that none of those men who were invited shall taste my supper.'" Now let's back up just a little bit and take a look at this as you no doubt have done over the years. When Jesus talks about this as a parable, he's talking and describing the supper that's been planned. Now there are times that events are planned maybe months in advance for us. And so we set the date and we get with the caterer or we line up the food that needs to be there. And so invitations have been sent out. We set out RSVP, rendezvous, si vous plaît. It's French. It means call me if you're coming, okay? Let me know about these things. So we want to know how many to expect. Now, the invitations have been sent out to this great banquet. And so this master had sent out these invitations in advance. And many times there would not be a set date. Sometimes even on marriages, invitations for marriages would be there. But you wouldn't know the exact time or the exact date. You remember there as Jesus talks about the bridesmaids, the foolish and wise bridesmaids. Why didn't they know what was going on and how much oil to bring? Because they didn't know exactly when the bridegroom was coming. But this great feast has been prepared, and these people have been invited. But when it comes time now to pull them in, to let them know that they need to come and be a part of this feast, they, with unity, they began to make excuses. "I'm not going to come." Isn't it disappointing when you invite somebody to come to your event and then they don't show? Maybe they said, "We're going to come," and then they don't show up. You've made preparations for them. Here's all this food and here are these other things that you've done, but also you're missing their company because you invited them and you wanted them to be a part of what was going on. Now look at these 3 excuses that are given. The first one says, "Well, I bought a piece of ground and I need to go and see it." Now, there are not many transactions that would take place like that, I'm sure, in today's day. You might be able to see something over the Internet, but still, I can't imagine somebody going to buy a piece of property without knowing more about it, to go and see it and see what kind of shape it was in. Thankfully now, we've divested ourselves of all property except for the property that we jointly own here with the bank and will jointly own for quite some time, I'm afraid. But I've had property before that I would just die for somebody to come and buy it from me. But not a single person would do it until they came and looked through the property and said, yes, this is what we want to do. This man's giving an excuse that really doesn't hold up. Who buys a piece of ground without seeing it first? He's just making an excuse. The second man says, well, I've gone and bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I need to go prove them in or test them, make sure that they're worthy. Again, who's going to do this? When I bought my car, this last car that I bought, I got on the internet, I started looking around for exactly what I wanted and exactly the price range I wanted. I kept increasing the distance, looking around in a circle from where we were in Nashville, and I found one. This was from Richmond Toyota. I thought, man, this is great. This is exactly the color and all the options I need and the price that I'm looking for. I phoned the fellow up. He said, yes, and I'll sell it to you for this price. And it was even better than I thought. I said, that's great. I'll come up, and we got a game to go to next week. I'll come up and see it then. And he said, well, what game is that? And I said, well, it's a game there in Lexington. He said, man, I'm 3 hours from Lexington. I thought it was Richmond, Kentucky. It turned out it was Richmond, Indiana. Okay. Now, they drove down to Louisville, and we met there, but I didn't buy it until I saw it. I got to test drive it and stuff. Now, that's as close as I've come to buying a car without even seeing it. But here, this man is going to buy 5 yoke of oxen. He's going to use that on his farm. That's a part of the implement of his business. He's not going to buy those without testing them in. The third man says, I've married a wife, and so I can't come. Sometimes we make fun of that, but you know, the Bible talks about the importance of us getting off to a great start in marriage. It talks about a man who does save up and makes sure that he's got the home ready and other things. And it also says that the man shouldn't work for a year, but for a year he ought to stay away from war. He ought to stay away from these other things, and he ought to make sure that his wife is happy. Isn't that great? That's in the Bible. You can look that up. And so this man says, now I've married a wife. I have other obligations now. I cannot come to your supper. So what does the master do? When he receives that news, he's very angry. Now, he's not going to overcome those objections with people because they've already been invited, accepted the invitation to begin with, and now when it's time to come, they made excuses. They just didn't want to go. So he says, I want you to go out to all these other places, and I want you to find the people who weren't in the first wave of invitations. I want you to find people that you wouldn't necessarily think of when you think of this great supper. The byways and the hedges, and I want you to compel them to come and be a part of this feast. And so that's what they did. The whole objective here with the master was to fill this great hall so that people who were there would be filled. And actually, what we're talking about here is God. And the great hall is going to be represented by heaven. He wants heaven to be filled. And as far as this first wave of people, well, many times you look at this and say, well, the Jews were God's chosen people. And so God gave them that first choice, and the gospel message went out to the Jews first and then later to the Gentiles, but they kept rejecting God over and over, and now it's open to all people everywhere. So the invitation was there, but oftentimes people would not take it. Now, let's take a look at what our duty might be in this process. What would our duty be? Well, our duty is to invite and to compel people to come. I cannot make a person make the decision to become a Christian. I can't force a person to come and be a part of a worship service or even to sit down in a Bible study. But what I can do and what you can do is be a proper representative of Jesus Christ. So that in the way that we live and conduct ourselves, in the speech that we use, in the manner in which we interact with people, we stand out as something that's special, something that is different. I read an article just this past week talking about, would they even know that you're a Christian? I've read several such articles along this line. It talked about being in the workplace and somebody retiring and something happening, and it make mention of him, and he was affiliated with such and such a church, and yet his coworkers came up and said, hey, man, I didn't even know that you were a Christian. What do you think it would say about us if we worked for 30 years in a place and the people that we worked with day in and day out did not know that we were a person that wore the name of Christ? Kind of undermines our ability to have that invitation go out. But we can't make people become Christians, but we can encourage them and invite them and compel them to come and learn about Christ. You see, the invitation is one of the things that we can do, all of us can do. We don't have to sit down and have the Bible study with the person. We don't have to stand up here and lead the song or even lead the prayer, but we can be friendly with that person. We can say, hey, look, I'll come by and pick you up. And Sunday morning, hey, I understand you go to church somewhere else. How about Sunday night or Monday night? we can come over. And by the way, Tuesday night, our group is having the meal there. Why don't you come and be a part of the meal with us as well? It'll be a great time. You'll be able to see some other people. You'll know people there from the community, I'm sure. And you'll also enjoy and benefit from the message that will be there. You'll love the singing as well. It's going to be a grand experience. See, we forget sometimes and take for granted just how great an experience it is to come and to worship God. But where will the invitations come from? This is a phrase that I came across several years ago. The church that is not reaching out is passing out. Well, there are different types of phrases that go along with this. But I want us to think about this as an event for the fall, because we've got just a couple of weeks left before Jeff will be here. And Jeff's a tremendous speaker. He really is. He's deep. He's good. He relates to people. He's been at it for a long, long time. And his heart is always in the right place. He wants to reach people. He wants to reach down and lift up the fallen. He wants to encourage everyone. And he wants you to be here, not because of him being here, but because he wants to help you get closer to Jesus Christ. Now, in this next slide, I've got a couple of quotes that I've used here before, but I think that they're good, and I want us to look at them again. Carl Henry said, "The gospel is only good news if it gets there on time." It's only good news if it gets there on time. I see accounts from time to time, looking back in the History Channel and some of these accounts of World War II, where the Japanese were on islands and they were cut off from their commanders. And for years after the war was over, they still thought that the war was going on. They had never received the news that the war was over. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? The war's over. You don't have to fight anymore. And here they are still holed up and away from their family because they had not received the news that the war was over. Can you imagine somebody receiving good news after it was too late? September, I believe, was National Suicide Prevention Month. I saw quite a few posts on that from time to time, watched a couple of documentaries on it, and I've got to tell you, depression and suicide and some other different issues are big issues in our society. They're big issues in the church as well. People become depressed, and they really look at life from a hopeless standpoint from time to time. What if they had good news that was coming and only came after they had taken their life or after they had done something very detrimental to their body, to their family, or to their profession? See, good news is only good news if it gets there on time. And, of course, we have the best news of all. This next quote now, I really like it, and it's a little bit more to the point. But Charles Spurgeon said, "If sinners be damned, let them leap over hell to hell over our bodies. If they will perish, let them perish with our arms around their knees. Let no one go there unwarned and unprayed for." Now look at that for a moment and think about that and think about the real weight of what it means for us to offer an invitation to somebody else. What does it mean? You might be the very person that with a kind comment and a conversation might be able to turn a person's heart towards God. You might be the very person who on that particular time, maybe next Thursday or maybe it's a Sunday week from now, that you're interacting with someone and your interaction with them causes them to begin the journey to heaven because of your invitation. It's a very heavy subject, I know, but when we think about how we need to invite people, we need to have this passion for those that are around us. A group of us were out at Wendy's a few weeks ago. I mentioned to you that one of the ladies that came around giving free Frosties, you know, if you go to Wendy's on Sunday night, they give you free Frosties, the little ones. And she came out, and we invited her to come to church. And she said she'll come sometime. Have to be on a Wednesday, but she said she'll come. When you interact with people this week and next week and the week after that, why not think in terms of this event that's coming up? Why not think in terms of, hey, we've got a meeting out here. Why don't you come and be my guest? We'd love to see you. I think it might make a big difference. Let's look very quickly at a few other passages here. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 6 and 7, a very familiar passage to us here where Paul's talking. And here's the crux of what he's saying. There are times when people get caught up with who's doing the baptizing, who's doing the preaching, who's doing this and who's doing that. We tend to forget that the bigger picture is about winning people over to Christ. I'm going to begin in verse 5. "Who then is Paul and who is Apollos, but ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave to each one? I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither is he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Now, he who plants and he who waters are one, and each one will receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are God's fellow workers, and you are God's field. You are God's building. Remember last week we talked about building up. And according to the grace of God, which was given to me, a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it. For no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, that's so true about laying the foundation and another person lays another course on top of that. If you've ever built a building and you pour that concrete foundation and begin to put the blocks up and then the bricks, you know that you got to do it in a certain order. You can't put the bricks up till the block wall is there, and you can't do that till the concrete foundation and the footers are poured. It's the same thing in reaching people. In my ministry, I've been able to reach a few people that years of preparation had already gone in to reaching them. The foundation had already been laid. The other courses were already there. And I just happened to be the person at the time at which they were ready to turn their heart over to Jesus and to become a Christian. I want to tell you something. Every part of that process is important. There's no glory in who it is that's doing the baptizing. We don't keep score on that. It's not an important thing for us. The important thing is that we're building up people and causing them to be closer to God. You remember one of the sermons I preached about a month and a half ago had to do with how are we? Are we going to be a stumbling block or a stepping stone to others? Are we going to hinder them in their path to Jesus, or are we going to help them along? Well, I want us to be people who are stepping stones. I want us to be people who are helping people along in this journey. Now, I've got four short invitations that are listed here. The first one comes from Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30. We've been here before in this passage as well. Jesus says the following. He says, come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Let's pause there just for a moment. Do you know of anybody that's struggling in their marriage? Do you know of anybody that's struggling maybe with how the prices keep going up and the wages don't go up enough to keep up with them? Do you know anybody that's struggling with where this country's going and what direction we're going in? I mean, we're killing all these infants and we're doing all these other things. We're letting all kinds of debauchery be legalized in our country. Don't you know that your neighbors and coworkers, don't you know that they're concerned with that? Even people who don't have a religious background are concerned with the direction this country is going. And don't you know that they're weary of the whole process? They want to find an answer. Did you know that you've already got the answer to all those problems? It's called God and Jesus Christ. Listen to this again. Jesus says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Don't you want to have some relief from all the worry about where this world is going and what's going to happen in this world? Isn't it better to know that this world is not my home? I'm just doing what? I'm passing through. That's right. Nothing in this world matters except for our eternal spirit. And we also need to have care for the spirits of others. Jesus goes on to say, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I can't imagine what it would be like to go through a loss of a loved one if I did not know about Jesus Christ. I can't imagine what it would be like to go home after a burial, not to have a church family to surround me with love and concern, and not to have others in the weeks and months to come to surround me with love and concern and encouragement. I can't imagine doing that without knowing that there is a life after this one and that God has secured that life for me. Don't you know that your friends that don't have that peace yet are looking for rest? Jesus says, come unto me. Another process here was found in the first chapter of John in verse 43. Jesus there is calling after Philip, and he calls Philip to follow him. Well, he's actually calling him and as well as the other apostles to follow him in that 3 to 3.5 year period of his ministry. But also Jesus calls to us for us to follow him in what we're doing. Paul puts it this way in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1. He says, imitate me as I also imitate Christ. We all need to be Christ-like. We all need to be walking in that direction, and we all need to benefit from the people who have already plowed that pathway for us. And so just as Paul says, you follow me, you imitate me, Jesus says, you follow me, you learn of me. And Jesus says, come unto me. In John chapter 4 and verse 29, we've talked about this before as well, with the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. Jesus is there with her and begins to talk with her, which is very unlikely that a Jewish teacher would talk to this unlearned Samaritan woman. But he does, and he asks for a drink from her. That begins a conversation, and Jesus begins to tell her things in her life. And he begins to tell her about her past husbands and about her situation. And then later she goes to her village, and she says, come see a man. Could this be the Messiah? He told me all these things that I ever did. Come see a man. And here's that invitation. Come and see a man. Do you think that Jesus has made a difference in your life? You see, I often see the comparison between Nicodemus in John chapter 3 and the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4, because Nicodemus is the man, he's learned, he's a Jewish man, he's a religious man. You'd think that Nicodemus would be doing all kinds of things for Jesus, but he comes to Jesus at night so no one can see him. We see Nicodemus pop up a couple other times in John, one to try to defend Jesus, and another time he's there with Joseph of Arimathea to claim the body of Jesus. But nowhere do we find Nicodemus in Scripture going and telling people, you need to follow this man. He's the Son of God. But this unlearned woman goes out because Jesus changes her life. She benefits from her time with Jesus. And she says, come see a man who told me all the things I ever did. Could this be the Christ, the Messiah? Friends, there are times that we need to be more like that woman in our passion of sharing Jesus with others. Come see a man. Come learn about Jesus, who rid me of all the consequences of my sins and helped me to rest at night, knowing that I don't have to worry about going to hell because of what I've done in the past. He's freed me from that bondage. He's helped to give me hope and assurance for the life to come. The fourth thing, then, comes from Acts chapter 22 and verse 16. Three times in the book of Acts, we see the account of Saul's conversion being told. And as Paul tells about this, he talks about how he's on the road to Damascus, and there the bright light shines down from heaven. It blinds him. He falls off his animal, and he has this conversation with Jesus. Later, he goes on into Damascus, where he was following Jesus' commands. Now, notice that Saul has already believed in Jesus. He called him Lord twice in that passage, the first time in a sense of respect. The second time is really in a sense of respect, knowing that this is Jesus. He believes that he is Jesus. He's certainly ready to repent, but what he was told to do was to go and to wait, and there it would be told him what to do. Well, you know this story. The Spirit talks to Ananias and tells Ananias to go to Saul. So as Ananias goes to Saul, he goes and encounters him, and he says, now why do you tarry? Arise and wash away your sins and be baptized, calling on the name of the Lord. Now, he's already been praying and fasting for 3 days, but he's still in his sins. He doesn't have those gone yet. But he had this Ananias who came to him, and he says, now what are you waiting for? Isn't it time that you went ahead and put on Christ? And that's what he did. That's what he did. There have been some people that I've been privileged to be around in my life who, I guess, were just waiting for somebody to ask them to become a Christian because they had believed for years and years. But I guess nobody had ever asked them just right out front, why don't you become a Christian? What is it that's keeping you from doing this? What hinders me? That's what the Ethiopian says. See, here's water. What hinders me from being baptized? An invitation, a question, a query that stirs the mind and stirs the heart and causes us to focus on what the really important things are. That's how important an invitation really is. I can't help the fact that some people are going to go to the bad place. I can do all I can, and you can do all you can to let them know about the consequences, but in the end, it's their choice and it's their decision. There'll be many people who'll be surprised when it comes to tax time because they've not properly set aside taxes for the bill, or they've not taken care of their insurance. Now they have this other bill that's going to come in, and they're going to be angered, and they're going to be upset, and then they're going to be frustrated. Why didn't somebody tell me? Why didn't somebody help out? And it was there all along. You need to set aside for your taxes. You need to pay these things in, but yet they didn't take care of what needed to be there. And there will be so many people on the day of judgment that will say, I never knew that this was the case. This country has more published Bibles in it than any other country on the face of the earth. Most households have at least 4 or 5 Bibles in them. Our household probably has about 30 or 40 in it, you know, different copies of the Bible. The Bible is not in shortage. What we have a shortage of is God's people extending that invitation for people to learn about Jesus Christ. I want us to be the type of people that can help people, to compel them to come. You see, we have a little time urgency because we have a meeting coming up. We want people to come and hear Jeff Jenkins. We want people to be a part of this event as we have this gospel meeting. He's going to be talking about the Christian life. It's going to be a great series. I know he's going to be a wonderful speaker, and it's going to be a great, inspiring time. We want people to come to that event. But more than that, we want people to go to heaven. I don't know of anyone that I know that I desire for that person to go to hell. I want every person that I know to go to heaven, including those who are enemies, who work to undermine the efforts of the Lord. I want everyone to go to heaven. But I know in my heart that not everyone will accept what Jesus says. But I also know that there are plenty of people out there that are just waiting for the opportunity to hear it one more time. Won't you please love them enough to reach out to your friends, neighbors, and coworkers, to your family members and others, and extend an invitation to them, if not for the meeting with Jeff, at least begin a conversation and plant a seed in their heart that lets them know that you care for them and that you want them to be in the best place when this life is over. We have a song of encouragement that's been selected for tonight. If we can help you in any way to become a Christian or to repair a relationship with God, won't you come now while we stand and